I'll invite you to turn in your Bibles to the book of Ruth in the Old Testament, Ruth chapter 1. While you're doing that, I just want to say what an encouragement it's been to be with you this week. I think I mentioned this at the beginning of the week, but last year was filled with lots of uncertainty and a lot of difficulty, and I don't know that this year is going to be much different. But churches weren't able to do some of these things, and even now some churches are still struggling to figure out how to be together. For you to have a gospel meeting is just encouraging. And the amount of people that made their way out every night, and especially tonight in the snow, this is nothing compared to where I'm from, but I know in other places, anytime white stuff falls from the sky, people pull the blinds and hunker down. But thanks for being here, and thanks for those of you that are tuning in online. Tonight I'm going to talk to the men, and I told you that. I probably shouldn't have said that. I noticed there's fewer men tonight, but I don't want to have any of these lessons feel like anybody's being beat up. But it's inevitable that whenever we look at Scripture and there's a standard that's set for godliness, it's hard not to feel like you're being rebuked by God's word, because every single one of us has shortcomings. Every single one of us needs to do better. And that's just the way God designed it. And I wouldn't be faithful to God's word if you didn't leave here feeling a little bit challenged. But I hope this week has not just challenged you, but has encouraged you, has reminded you of how valuable it is to live for the Lord. I hope tonight will be the same for the men. The day before I preached this sermon, originally, a couple years back, I had taken my son from Minnesota down to Indiana. We had attended a Bible camp there, Indiana Bible Camp. It's just an all-boys camp. I know some of your boys have gone over there to that camp. And it's one of the most encouraging weeks I have every year, because you've got all these men together, young men, older men, and they're just doing all the right things. They're studying their Bibles, they're being kind to each other, they're helping each other. And it's almost otherworldly. It's not the way it is when you get outside the camp. And I was reminded of that when me and my son went to get on the airplane in Indianapolis and fly home. We were standing in line in the TSA line, and there was a man who was not old, he was younger than me, I'd say, but you could tell he was well off, successful. The way he was dressed and the way he carried himself. And next to him, there was his beautiful wife with, I think, like three beautiful children. It seemed like eight because of the way things were going. It was a little chaotic. But this man was paying no attention to how difficult it was for that woman to wrestle with these kids and get all the stuff on the conveyor belt and get them through security. He was just kind of in his own world. And he was obviously well-traveled. He knew what he was doing. She, on the other hand, I don't think had traveled much or in a while. And again, she was sort of left to do all of this. And I could tell by the way she was carrying herself and the feel of all of that, that she was frustrated. They got through the line, and the man grabbed his things, you know, those bins that you send through, and he took off to go change and get his clothes back on and do all the things you do, and left this woman with the kids and all the bags and all the things, and she was having a hard time. And at some point, she looked at me, because I could tell she had a question about, what are we supposed to do with these bins? Do you put them back yourself? Do they get them? But her husband was nowhere to be found. And she looked at me, and I understood what she was asking with her eyes, and I said, are you wondering what to do with these? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, it kind of depends on you. Some people leave them, some people put them away, but me and my son will take care of it. And I said, but you know, us men, we just never really clean up after ourselves. And I was trying to lighten the mood, and it did. She laughed, and I think felt better, but she nodded in a way that said, that's right, you men, you're all sort of self-centered. And you usually forget about how hard things are for us. I talked to my son about that, and I did better back home for like 3 days with my wife. I did. I was like much better for a couple days, and then I went right back to being a man. We're going to talk about someone who I think sometimes is overlooked in Scripture. The book of Ruth, because it's named after her, is usually focused on for Ruth. Ruth is a great character. She does amazing things. But I was struck at some point in my life by how amazing Boaz is in this book. And I'm going to just show the men some things about Boaz that I think if he could talk to us, he would say, listen, if you want to be a godly man when things are difficult in the world, these are some of the characteristics that will make you godly. Look at the context of this book. Look at Ruth 1:1. Says, now it came about in the days when the judges governed. Now that's how the book begins. It came about in the days when the judges governed. Now if you know anything about the book preceding this, you know that the days that the judges governed were not bright days. They weren't good days. They were dangerous days. They were difficult days. In fact, if you just go back one verse in the Bible to Judges 21:25, it says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Moral relativity, religious relativity. There's two stories at the end of the book that illustrate those two things. But over and over again in the book of Judges, you see how self-centered and dark and violent people were. It wasn't safe even to go out and travel. That's the context for this story. Now, one of the things that has to jump out at you when you read this is how even though most everybody did what was right in their own eyes, there were a few exceptions to that. There were some people who did what was right, even though the culture and the darkness around them would have tempted them to be different. And Boaz is one of those men. Now, let me say a little bit about Ruth, because that will help understand the story and how Boaz's kindness to Ruth was significant. Do you remember where Ruth was from? She was from Moab. She was a Moabitess. And if you go back to Judges 3, you find out that Moab had oppressed Israel during the days of the judges. And things got very bad during that time. So imagine, when Ruth moves to Israel, she's got the stigma of being from this place that was once very oppressive to Israel. Imagine how many people would have hated her just because of her culture or where she'd been from. But you also have to keep in mind that Ruth may have had some bad feelings about Israel. Do you remember that in Judges 3, the king of Moab was a fat king named Eglon? You remember that guy? His name just sounds fat. I mean, like, he was a big guy. And the only way that Israel could deal with the oppression was to send an assassin over to Moab. So Ehud, the left-handed judge, got over there and got into the palace and got into the bathroom when Eglon was in it and stabbed him in the stomach. And the guy was so fat he couldn't get the knife out. But just think about this for a minute. Can you imagine if somebody from another culture that was oppressing our nation moved here, but the history between our nations was not only had they oppressed us, but we had assassinated their king in his own palace. Do you think there's drama there or baggage or any kind of hard feelings? And Ruth moves right back to Israel with Naomi. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time in chapter 1, but you'll remember that there was a famine in the land, and actually, the family of Naomi, a man named Elimelech, moved over to the land of Moab. Something strange about this. Why any faithful Israelite would leave Israel to go to a foreign nation seems cowardly. It seems materialistic. Just because there's a famine, you don't abandon your people. You don't abandon the tabernacle. You don't leave where God is to go to a different place. But they did. And then Elimelech and his sons all end up dead. And Ruth and her daughter-in-laws begin the journey back to Israel. Now on the way, Naomi tries to talk the girls out of coming, and Ruth won't have it. Ruth says, no, I'm going to go with you. Where you go, I'll go. Where you die, I'll die. Your God will be my God. Your people will be my people. People use that sometimes in weddings, you know. And I guess that's all right. But the devotion of Ruth was not even so much to Naomi as it was. She was looking for God. And you're going to find that out here in chapter 2. But let's get into the story. So let's go to chapter 2 and be introduced to Boaz. Ruth 2, verse 1. Now, Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor. And she said to her, go, my daughter. Oh, just stop there. Let's take something from verse 1 that we can learn about the man Boaz. Now we're just told by the narrator that there's this man who has great wealth. And he's related to Elimelech. And we're going to find out in a bit that it's Boaz. And more about him. But here's what I learned from this first verse. Is that Boaz was someone who was both committed and constant. Remember what the beginning of this book taught us? What was going on in the land of Israel? A famine. Do you suppose there were very many people in Israel that did well through the famine? Most of them are getting out of town or struggling. Here you've got a man who not only is doing well, he's working hard, he has a field. This is implying that this has been a man who's done his work over these years. He didn't hightail it out of town. Every day he got up and did what he was supposed to. He made sure to provide for his own and even those that were around. And I guess this is just a lesson for us men. I was having this conversation the other day. During all that's happened this last year, lots of people losing jobs, lots of people being laid off, lots of people going through financial hardships. Something that I've noticed everywhere I've been is that you don't see very many Christians in that situation. Think about it. Maybe there are some. Maybe there are some who've lost their jobs. Maybe there are some who are struggling, and that's the exception to the rule. What I've seen is the godly people that I know aren't begging bread. They're not just taking it easy. In fact, if they did lose a job, they got right back to looking for something to do. And that's because what godly people do is they decide they're going to be committed to providing for their own and those around them, and they stay constant even when times are hard. And Boaz seems to be that kind of man. Let's keep reading now. Verse 3. Chapter 2, verse 3 says, so she departed, and she went... She departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Let's go ahead and notice this. I'm going to use two words to describe him here. I would say that what this verse teaches is that Boaz was both obedient to God and generous to others. Do you remember that there was, in the law of Moses, a provision that if you were a landowner or a field owner, you weren't allowed to just take all the crops for yourself? By the way, do you think there was probably a temptation to do that during days of famine? But here you find out that there's a field, and a portion of the field belongs to Boaz, and here you have poor people coming into the field, gleaning behind the reapers. The only kind of man that would allow something like that in his field was an obedient, generous man. And so Ruth finds him, begins to do exactly what the law of Moses provided, because there was somebody in the days of the judges where everyone did what was right in their own eyes, there was someone who did what was right in God's eyes. So men, is this how we show ourselves to be? No matter what anybody else around us is doing, our question is, what did God say I'm supposed to do, and I'm obedient to it, and I'm kind to the people around me, and I'm being generous with what God's blessed me with? Let's continue to read. Verse 4. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, "May the Lord be with you." And they said to him, "May the Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" The servant in charge of the reapers replied, "She is the young Moabite woman who returned from Naomi with Naomi from the land of Moab." And she said, "Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." Thus she came and has remained from the morning until now. She has been sitting in the house for a little while. All right, let's kind of watch this scene and just make a couple of observations. You see there in verse 4, when Boaz comes to the reapers, notice how he talks to them. He comes up to the reapers and he says, "Hey guys, get to work. Why are you sitting around?" No. His opening line to them is, "The Lord bless you." You ever had a boss like that? Have you? That when he came to check out his stuff, his fields, his business, his demeanor when he would walk onto the job site was, "Hey everybody, God bless you today." And everybody would respond with, "God bless you too." Wouldn't that be something? But some of us men, all we care about is, how much money are we making today? Are we turning a profit? Are we getting things done? Why are you sitting around? But what if you had the kind of spirit that was simply kind? I talked about this with the women yesterday, but what if there were really men that when everybody else was living their own life, God was forgotten, there was no king in Israel, you still thought about God and wanted people to be blessed by God, and so you talked like that and meant it. But notice the other thing about this means he was a spiritually minded man. Even in the darkest of days of Israel, God was on his mind and God's blessings were on his mind. And then the last thing I put on the board there is that he was observant. Do you suppose there were a lot of people that would come and go through Boaz's field? But he notices this woman. Now, somebody might argue, well, maybe she was exotic. You know, she was Moabitess. It's a new woman and he's attracted to her. By the way, sometime do the research on this. Do you have any idea how old Ruth would have been and how old Boaz would have been? Probably a 40-year difference. I don't think this old man was taken by this young, beautiful woman, and that's what caught his attention. What I think you see about Boaz is he was an observant man. He just kind of saw people. How many of us men don't do a very good job with this? We only see what we want to see. Now, I'm going to be very specific about this. If you are the kind of man that comes into this building, looks for your hunting buddies or your fishing buddies or the guys you like to talk to, and that's sort of who you notice is here, and you don't notice if there's a new person sitting there, somebody you've never seen, somebody who doesn't look like you, then you need to learn from Boaz that people matter. And so that's what he says. He says, "Who is this? Who's this woman?" And he listens when he's told who she is. And then the story's going to go on. So let's read further, verse 8. Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this place, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw." Let's go ahead and stop there. I'm going to ask the women a question. Is there anything about that interaction that jumps out at you? When Boaz, the owner of the field, an Israelite, well-respected, looks at you, a foreigner who's scared to death to be in this new place, surrounded by all these strangers who probably don't like you much, is there anything that strikes you about the way he talks to her and the things that he says? Would you feel safe with a man like this? He's thoughtful. Men, we're not always so. I'm just being honest about me. I'm usually thinking about me and the people that I like the most. I'm not usually very inclusive to some people, especially when they're not like me and I'm not sure who they are. And it wouldn't occur to me, maybe, for that person that came in to visit the congregation to say, hey, don't go anywhere else. I know you guys got choices around here. You know, one of the nice things about Minnesota, there's not a bunch of churches to choose from. When people come in and they're looking for God's people, we say, well, you're stuck with us because there's not anybody else. But you guys got enough churches around, people can go, right? They can shop. Try this sometime. Next time somebody comes in, I'd say, especially if they don't look like you, and especially if you don't think they have anything to offer, maybe they look like a beggar, like a woman who's crawling through the streets trying to just find some food to eat. Think to say something like this: you stay here. We'll take care of you. You be with us. And here's the thing I think that's most impressive. Women, did you notice this? He's protective of this woman. This is going to be hard to hear, men. Some of us men are the men that the women need to be protected from. We don't think right about them. We're so messed up by the way we've viewed women and the things we've looked at and the ways that we've thought that we're actually kind of the one that needs to be told, hey, don't look at her that way. Don't get near her. But how many of us men go that extra step and actually become the protectors? Again, women, have you ever worked in a place where you struggled with the way men looked at you or talked to you or treated you and you felt uncomfortable? What if you had a boss, the guy that was in charge, that made it a point to say to all the other men around, don't mess around here. These people are important. There's a lot of applications for that, men. It's not just the way we treat women. It's the way we treat people that look different than us, that think different than us. Are we thoughtful, inclusive, and protective? Let's keep reading. Verse 10 of chapter 2. She fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner?" Boaz replied to her, "All that you have done for your mother, that you have done your mother-in-law after the death of your husband, has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge." Stop there if you would. Right, there's a number of things that I think we can observe here in this conversation. Number one, Boaz is a good listener. He actually, when she says, "Hey, why have I found favor in your sight?" he doesn't say, "Well, I think you're beautiful." He says, "I've been listening to what everybody else has been saying. I've heard reports about you." Now, yesterday, I talked about the problem of gossip. You know, while there is an issue with gossip, another thing that's wonderful about women is that women care enough about people to talk about them and think about them. And a lot of times they're saying a lot of good things. Men, do you pay attention to that? Do you know people's stories in this place? And if you do know their stories and you're kind to them and they say, "Why are you kind to me?" you're able to say back with words, "I know your story. And you're an impressive person and you've done good in this world. And I'm thankful that you are who you are." He was a good listener. And I want you to really notice this point. He understood God. And he also understood how to work with God. This is really striking to me. He doesn't say, "You've come here to seek help from me." He says, "I know, Ruth, you're here to seek help from God. And I'm going to help you with that. You stay here. I'll do my part." But the bigger picture in this story is, you're looking for something better than me. Men, do we think like that about the people around us? Your children. As much as you love them and as much as you want them to get a good education or have a good career, maybe you're impressed with some young person in this congregation who's trying to make better for their life. I want to suggest to you that you see yourself the way Boaz saw himself. There's a bigger picture here. And what we need to encourage people to do is seek the refuge of God and let us help in however, whatever way we can. Keep reading. Verse 13. Then she said, I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants. By the way, if you think deeply about this verse, if you can picture this moment between Ruth and Boaz, this will choke you up a little bit. This foreign woman, widow, doesn't know the people, doesn't know the language, scared to death about everything around her, has found this man, and by the way, she doesn't even know really who it is yet, not until Naomi's going to explain it to her in the next chapter. But she's found this man who's being so kind to her that she just says, you've been so good to me. In fact, I want you to look close at the verse again, and you see where she says, you've comforted me and have spoken kindly to me. The New American Standard has a footnote there for spoken kindly. And it literally means in the Hebrew, you have spoken to my heart. So men, if we're going to be men of God, we've got to learn how to become people who can comfort others and speak to their heart. Women, would you agree that it's rare to find a man like this? A lot of men can speak to your head. They can speak to the logic of a thing. They might bring you a sense of safety or security because of their strength. But how rare is it when some man can comfort you? Like literally make you relax and feel safe. And then not just talk to your head, but speak to your heart. Touch you. Now, I wish I had like a brilliant way to say to all of us men, here's how you do it. I don't know. But I think it has something to do with what we've already talked about. You care about God's things. You pay attention to people. You listen. You think about what's going on in their life. You learn to talk about what's going on in their life. You let them hear that you know what's going on in their life and that you've thought about it and that you want to encourage them and help them in any way. And if you'll just do those simple kinds of things with people, I think you'll find that you touch people in a way that nobody else has. Y'all, one day, Lord willing, we'll have elders in this place again. Whoever those men are, could I please say, don't just be good at getting up here and telling everybody what the decisions are. Don't just be good at figuring out the direction of the church for curriculum. Don't be good at doing the books and the numbers and all of that. Here's what men of God need to be. People who know the stories of the people in the room and comfort them and speak to their hearts. Keep reading, verse 14. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers and he served her roasted grain and she ate and was satisfied and had some left. When she rose to glean, Boaz commanded his servants, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves and do not insult her. Also, you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles and leave it that she may glean and do not rebuke her. He is providing here and sacrificial. I mean, this, I get, and I'm not going to suggest otherwise, It sounds like Boaz is a little bit sweet on Ruth. Maybe it's because it's Naomi's girl. But he does say to the servants, hey, guys, as you're going, leave a little extra behind. Like, let her have a boost or a head start. You know, let's give her her best chance. But that costs Boaz something. You know, what kind of boss says be wasteful for people that don't have anything? He is providing and sacrificial. Now, the rest of chapter 2 is great. I mean, here's Ruth sitting at his table enjoying food with all of the servants. There's so much food that she's served that she actually takes leftovers with her. I don't know how they did that back then. I don't think they had Ziplocs or Tupperware, but she wraps something up in her coat and she goes and brings it back to Naomi. And then when she gets back to Naomi, Naomi says, what's going on? What'd you do today? And Ruth tells the story, and Naomi gets so excited and says, oh, this is good news. This is one of our family. This is Boaz. And for the rest of the season, all through the harvest, Ruth goes there every day. And Boaz lets her. All right, let's go to chapter 3. Chapter 3, verse 1 says, then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Now is not Boaz our kinsman with whose maids you were? Now is not Boaz our kinsman with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what you shall do. She said to her, all that you say I will do. Now, Naomi comes up with this plan. She says, Ruth, put on your best clothes, wash your face, wash yourself, put on your perfume, go down to where Boaz is going to be, wait till he's done eating and drinking, lie down at his feet, and he'll take care of the rest. Now that's a weird night for Ruth, don't you think? I don't understand all of this. I don't know everything that's going on in the story. But Ruth goes ahead and does what she says. And I want you to watch how Boaz responds. Boaz wakes up to Ruth at his feet, and let's start around verse 9. He said, who are you? And she answered, I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative. And then he said, may you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. Stop there. He wakes up. He says, who are you? She says, I'm Ruth. Please take care of me. And then just listen to Boaz. He says, Ruth, you are a good woman. You've been kind since the very beginning. I've watched you and you've been godly. You've not gone after other men. You've not run around. You've been faithful. And then he also does something else that I think we need to learn as men. He reports to this woman the good things that other people have been saying about her. Everybody speaks about how excellent you are. He encourages her. He compliments her. He builds her up. Have you ever had that happen to you? Where you're having a bad day, or you were struggling to feel good about whatever, and somebody just says to you, hey, I've heard people talking about you. And they all talk about how wonderful you are. You're a good person. You encourage others. You're excellent. You ever had that happen? How's that feel? Men, women are better at this than us. Again, with all the gossiping that goes on, a lot of times what you hear is the good things. And we fathers, we need to get better about this. If ever someone is speaking well of your children, Don't just puff your chest out and think that means something about you. Go to your kids and say, hey boy, hey girl, hey kid. People see good in you. And I'm thankful for that. You keep it up. I'm proud of you. I'm blessed by you. I'm privileged to know you. Again, men, these are hard things to develop in our character because sometimes the culture around us says that to talk like this or to act like this is somehow soft. Are you kidding me? These are some of the strongest ways that men can act. Continue on. Verse 12. Now it is true, I am a close relative. However, there's a relative closer than I. Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good. Let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning. Men, we need to learn to put God and others before ourselves. Now let me be, again, I'm speculating here, but I'm just going to tell you what I think. I do think that Boaz is a little bit sweet on Ruth. I think he's impressed with her. I think he's somewhat interested in maybe bringing this woman into his life and into his family. But notice what he does. He says, I'd love to help you. I'd love to take you in. I'd love to make you mine, but I'm not allowed to do it first. There's somebody that the law says is closer to this. Do you know how hard that is for men? To not just take what they want when they want it because it could be that there's something better for this person. Every young man who's ever talked a young woman into having the kind of relationship that God doesn't want to have because, hey, I love you, has not been like this. A godly man may want something, but because God wants something different for this girl, you don't do your interests. You do God's. By the way, I think probably some of you did something like this. You loved a girl, and she was trying to decide between you and this other guy, and you wanted to fight for her and win her heart, but you looked at the situation and you thought, you know what? To be real, that guy's probably a better man for her than me. How hard is it for a man to say, what's best for you, not for me? It's exactly what he does. Now, notice the last part of this. Last thing about Boaz. Verse 14. So, she lay down at his feet until morning and rose before one could recognize another. And he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. Again, he said, give me the cloak that is on you and hold it. So she held it and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. Then she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did it go, my daughter? And she told all that the man had done for her. And she said, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Then she said, wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today. Now, 2 things I want you to notice there. Go back to verse 13. Do you notice at verse 13, here's what Boaz said. I will take care of this in the morning. Did you hear that? Now, notice what Naomi says in verse 18. He'll take care of this morning. Men, we need to be reliable. We need to be the kind of men that when we say, we'll do this right now, that not only will we do it right now, everybody knows we'll do it right now. Boaz does the thing in the morning, or says he will. Naomi says, don't worry, he'll do the thing. Now look at chapter 4, verse 1. Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, the close relative of whom Boaz spoke was passing by, and he said. Now, the rest of the story is Boaz is brilliant in his interaction with this man. He basically says, hey, there's this redeemer opportunity and you're going to get lots of land. And the guy jumps at the opportunity because great business decision. I'll love that. And then he says, oh, by the way, but you've got this woman that needs to become your wife. if you're going to do it. And the guy said, never mind. And Boaz got both the woman and the property. It's pretty brilliant. But men, just take a minute to look at that list again. If you can become the kind of man who's committed and constant, who isn't going to be lazy, who's going to do what they're supposed to do, even in times of famine, even in times of darkness, if you're going to be obedient to God and generous to others, if you're going to be kind and spiritually minded and observant about the lives around you, you're going to be thoughtful about people and inclusive, and just look at the list. And imagine what you could do in the world that you live in, the workplace, the family, the church, if you would just take Boaz's advice. I want to end with this. In Matthew chapter 24, Jesus said something I want you to hear. Matthew chapter 24. While you're turning there, I'll point out, some people point out that Boaz is a type of Christ because he redeemed Ruth. Now, the result of that union was they had children, and eventually the descendant was David, and eventually the descendant was Jesus. But Boaz was more like Jesus, not just because he redeemed Ruth, but because of who he was. But now listen to what Jesus said. This is in Matthew 24, starting in verse 9. He was talking about the destruction of Jerusalem and times that would get very dark, kind of like the time of the judges. He said, "Then they will deliver you to tribulation and will kill you, and you will be hated by all nations because of my name. At that time, many will fall away and will betray one another and hate one another. Many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. Because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end, he will be saved. This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached to the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come." Now, here's what I want you to hear Jesus saying. Imagine just for a minute, Jesus could show up and say this to us tonight, and maybe he was telling the truth. What if he said, "Hey guys, time's coming in this nation when being a Christian is going to be really hard. People are going to be delivered over to death. People are going to die. People are going to persecute you. It's going to get really, really dark here." Would some of you say, "Yeah, I see that coming"? And then he says, "And by the way, as that's going on, some of you all are going to start being unkind to each other and hating each other." That's what he said there in verse 10. You're going to betray each other. You're going to, over politics, divide and be unkind. And people are going to fall away from God. You think that's going to happen? And then Jesus said this. Because lawlessness increases. Do you know what most people will do? They'll just stop loving altogether. If you can't beat them, join them. It's too hard to love people in a dark world like this. It's too hard to be a man of God or a woman of God when everybody around me is doing the lawless thing. And if you ever feel like that, here's what I want you to remember. Boaz didn't do that. And neither did Jesus. And neither did the apostles who were warned by this text to not let their love grow cold. I'll tell you what, as Jerusalem was coming apart at the seams in the book of Acts, what you saw in the book of Acts were Christians who loved deeper and better and took care of each other and defied the world because they knew what love meant. Men, it's time for us to step up. Especially right now, as lawlessness increases, don't let your love grow cold. Let it grow better and bigger and stronger, more courageous. Thanks for your attention. We're going to sing this song that's meant to encourage. Whatever we can do for you tonight, let us know how we can help you together.